the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Fans, welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We've got a lot of stuff to get to, some newsy stuff here on the Peristyle Podcast. We're going to talk about that news, some breaking news, broken by my co-host Keely Yore. Follow on Twitter at Keely is my name, having to do with the NCAA transfer portal and the ever-important running back room. We're going to get to that in a little bit. Before we jump into all that stuff, this is a hi to Keely because she's right here. Keely, how you doing?
Oh, hello, Ryan. I'm doing well. Sorry.
You said I'll go to you right away, right?
Yeah, I was not prepared for that, but it's okay.
You could have been putting on makeup. You're doing something, you know, eating something on the side or whatever.
True.
But no. You were ready.
I was ready. I was getting the reviews ready.
Yes. Well, it's good to be back in studio with you and talking about the USC Trojans. If you guys have any questions or comments for the show, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or call or text us at 424-254-9141, especially important during this offseason. We want some different topics. Anything you want to discuss, doesn't have to be a question. It could be some sort of topic that you want us to, hey, why isn't USC running the ball with a fullback in the I formation? Now, we've talked about that before.
But we've definitely gotten that before.
You can bring it up, and we'll talk about it with you. And if you actually, we have one of these. If you want to get your question going right to the top before we talk about any news, before we talk about anything, leave us a review on your Apple Podcasting app. I just got an iPad, by the way, so I got more.
Congrats!
More things that have Apple Podcasting apps.
Slowly becoming an Apple man.
I'm slowly working my way there. Follow us on the Peristyle Podcast. Leave us a 5-star rating. That's always important. It does help grow the show. But you could leave us a review. Any kind of comments you have, suggestions. But if you put a question, boom, we bump you up right to the top of the show. And we have one right now.
We do. We actually have 3 new reviews. So thank you guys. I really appreciate all the kind words. So first off, we have a 5-star review from JB, class of 82. And he says, you have made a recovery from my knee replacement livable. Can't wait for the start of the season and more in-depth breakdowns from Shotgun and recruiting updates from Chris. Ryan, let's get together for a hike. Thanks again. Jay Boone, class of 80 and 83.
Jay, yeah. Well, hopefully that bionic knee of yours will get on a nice big hike. I gotta get back into it. I gotta do the 6-pack again because San Gorgonio is open again. It's like the big peaks in Southern California. I missed one because the fires closed it. But I want to do all 6 in one season. I did 5 last season and then I couldn't do the 6. So I'm starting with Mount Wilson. So that's my next one. So Jay, you know, give me a ring and maybe we'll do Mount Wilson together.
Look at that. That's a pandemic development. You become a hiker, man.
That was like one thing you could do. I played a lot of golf because you're out basically walking around a park by yourself or hiking, which you're walking up a mountain by yourself.
So, nice. Yeah. Very nice. And then we got a 5-star review from U2 Scott who says, this whole crew rocks. Been listening to the podcast since it started and been on the website lurking ever since Ryan started it up. The chemistry is great, and I look forward to all the podcasts as I listen to them when I run or commute. Great job. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks
I
for that.
I can't imagine listening to my voice while running, so apologies for that. That just seems more painful. But
they put it on the higher speed, and then so they run faster, maybe? Like, yeah.
Maybe, okay. And then, now to our 5-star question from Trojan1989, who said, great podcast, 5 stars. Thanks for all that you do and keeping everyone updated on the team. I have a question, though, for anyone who wants to answer. Todd McShay had his mock 2022 draft yesterday on NFL Live and had Keaton Slovis going number 2 to the Lions. So do you think he leaves next year or stays until his senior season? Thanks, Justin.
Yeah, I would bet on leaving at this point. I mean, I think there's going to be it's hard to picture this coaching staff staying intact. You know, if USC does really well, you know, Clay Helton could be back. If USC doesn't do well, my guess is Clay Helton isn't going to be around. Then what happens with Graham Harrell? If USC is really good and Clay Helton stays, does Graham Harrell get a head coaching job? Either way, I think there's going to be enough shakeup that Keaton Slovis, if he has like a good year or a decent year, he probably is going to to go out. My guess is Keaton Slovis, this will be his last year. And I don't know if he's going to be the number two pick, but if he has like a season like he did in 2019, he has that potential. I don't know. What do you think, Keely?
Yeah, if he has that 2019 magic again, he's definitely gone. But I can also see a scenario where maybe he's not what we've seen. He's more like 2020 Keaton Slovis, and the promise of a new coach coming in, hypothetically, gets him to stay. Who knows? This is very lofty over here. But I can see it going both ways. I'm indecisive on this one. But it's one of those things where if he gets any type of momentum as a third-year quarterback, he's gone. That's usually what happens.
Yeah, I would say so. Just for me, like if he has like a pretty good year and it's like everyone's still like, okay, maybe he's a second round pick. Do you want to come in with a whole new coaching staff and try to learn something new? So that's why I have a hard time picturing him coming back. I mean, there's definitely scenarios where it could happen, but I just don't see them as very likely. But thanks for the question.
Yeah, the 5-star question.
I love that. That's great. Also, before we jump in everything, I want to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been awesome to us. I got to make my little run. I usually go beforehand, but things ran a little long this morning, Keely. Got my Meals on Wheels day.
Wow.
Played a little beach volleyball this morning.
The
tough
life of Ryan.
Get my exercise. Did some work earlier on. I'm trying to do my cousin, she's not vegan, but kind of vegan, and trying to get me not to eat as much. I'm a carnivore, you know, trying to get me that stuff. So I was looking at some stuff at Trader Joe's that's not, you know, maybe my normal cup of tea. So I like bolognese sauce. There's a vegan style pasta sauce, bolognese. You want to try it out with tomatoes, meatless plant-based crumbles in there.
Oh,
so you want to check it out.
Innovative.
But they actually have some other, if you, and I know that, you know, some of the stuff is up your alley because the, you know, the gluten stuff, vanilla non-dairy frozen dessert. You know, I love ice cream, but it's funny, like things that are kind of like ice cream, I like that too. I just always end up getting ice cream. So like, well, I'll try.
Kind of like ice cream?
Yeah, like the frozen yogurt stuff or whatever, but I'll try that. Non-dairy. So for the people that don't, do you ever do like cauliflower rice? They have spicy Mexican style rice cauliflower. So kind of looking for that. And there's this one I got to try, Magnificauce. It's a tangy sauce of secret proportions. But supposed to be healthy for you. So like I like a good sauce. So there's some things that are, you know, trying to go off the reservation a little bit for me. You know, that other people get, but I don't usually get that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I will try that this time.
Good
around
job. Proud of you.
Try some different things. Oh my God. Like you eat fish, right? You like sushi?
I like fish.
Apparently there's some documentary out. I don't even want to say it because my cousin was like, you got to watch this documentary. You're never going to eat fish again. I'm like, I'm not going to watch that documentary. I want to eat fish. Like, I like fish.
That seems like the Ryan Abraham
way. Yeah, like, I'm just going to avoid that. You know, sort of like if your check engine light comes on, you're like, yeah, you know, I'm going to put, I think Homer puts a piece of tape over it. He's like, oh, something's wrong. Well, the piece of tape fell off so I can see the check engine light.
Like, if you don't go to the doctor, then you won't know if anything's wrong with you?
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
I'm good with the dentist. I actually go like three times a year.
You go a lot to the dentist.
I go a lot. Well, there's some, I started going just because, like, yeah, this is sort of avoiding. You get the cleaning in and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
6-month cleaning you should do, but now I'm doing every 4 months, you know.
Look at you. PSA, people follow our dentist.
Go get your dentist stuff. I don't go to the doctor very much, but I go to the dentist.
So okay. Like,
you know, we want the teeth and stuff to look good. Before we jump into everything on the show, I just wanted to give a shout out to our friends over at Reign of Troy.
Ayo.
Yeah. So Michael and Alicia, we've had them on. Have we had Michael? I think we've had them both.
I mean, they pretended to be us for April Fools, and we pretended to be them.
Yeah,
so.
That was funny. So if Michael, when he was a kid, used to come to my tailgates. Like him, his dad would bring him to the tailgates and stuff, and he brought it up. And Alicia's, you know, been doing a great job. I mean, she would be out there like a one-man band at practice, like tweeting out stuff, posting stories. She was doing that a lot, and then she just got a job at FanSided, so she's not going to be around as much. But they're going to still do their show, and it's been fun to see them, you know, kind of grow. And a lot of the podcasting stuff, everyone has different styles. If you guys listen to podcasts, you listen to us. If you like the information, that's one thing. And you want to get, okay, we want to be informed. But you have to, there's chemistry between hosts and stuff. And that's important. Like, how do they get along? If it's just someone, they're like, you have like the best reporter. Like if you listen to Woj or something and he had a podcast, because he breaks all this news all the time.
He does have a podcast.
But if he, I never listened to it. I'm not a big NBA guy. But like if he was boring as hell, like people would still listen because he's the information guy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You grow by like, oh, people like you. You like your chemistry. Like, what are these guys going to talk about? And I think they've had great on-air, you know, chemistry for a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't really know the background of like him basically being in love with her for all those years. And like, because we've known her, like I've known her, I've met like a boyfriend or something that she has had over the years. Like we had our, in Texas, was it 2017? We had this event. So like a road event.
Yeah.
Big, you know, we were like, okay, we're there was a key bar, USC owned. And we're like, okay, we'll have like, you know, 20, 30 people come to this thing.
Tangent, but yes.
Yes, it's way tangent. And we're there. And we had like 250 people show up in the rain. Like it was, we were packed, couldn't get a drink because it was just so, like we, I guess no one had anything to do in Austin that was a USC fan. They came to our thing. Well, Alicia came and she was dating some guy.
I'm sure they really love you bringing
up. I don't care.
Past.
But like, I've just the point is like, I've seen her with.
Yes.
Yeah. And didn't really know that was going on. And then on their recent podcast, he kind of, it was like a bonus episode or something. And they kind of explained like when he like was smitten by her. And that was like, you know, a long time ago. And then. Yeah, you know, then they had started dating and all this stuff. And then he asked her on air. And it was like, I was like driving the car and like was tearing up. I was so like, it was just really cool the way he did it. It was perfect for them. So anyway, I know it's long, them, whatever. Yeah. But they're great people. And we just wanted to wish them congratulations. You were there at their game night that night.
So I was. So I was there post engagement. And I got the fake episode like right after it happened. So yeah, it was really exciting to see. So I actually knew before it was gonna happen, and I'm kind of a blabbermouth, so I was trying really hard not to say anything.
Nice.
So, yeah. So congrats to them. Very happy for them.
Very, very cool. So yeah, you don't usually see like podcast hosts like get married, but there they go. So.
Well, it's funny because I put it on my Insta story and then everyone was like, they were dating? And I was like, I felt like everyone kind of knew based on the chemistry, but I guess not.
Yeah, well, I didn't know. Like, I usually am the last to know all these things, but then I think you might have told me or something, or I'm like,
I think so.
Yeah, or there was like, or I was like, hey, are they dating? You're like, yeah, they've been dating. I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't know that.
There you go.
But congrats to Michael and Alicia. Yeah, great stuff there. All right, we got some breaking news to get to. Okay, so. Keely, since you broke this on the Twitters and on USCfootball.com, what's going on with USC running back Stephen Carr?
Yeah, he entered the transfer portal on Tuesday. That's something that I had heard for a bit, but, you know, guys kind of get cold feet. They're not sure about it, but he did officially enter on Tuesday. And that's something where, you know, coming into spring camp, Mike Jenks was talking about with the LA Times, you know, USC really needs to have 1 to 2 ball carriers, ball carriers. They're not going to have this like run by committee thing. And so we kind of saw that play out in spring camp, and Jenks kind of doubled down on his statement when we asked him about it in his media availability. And he said, you know, I've told these guys to be prepared. Like there will be decreased carries if you're not one of the two guys that I want to start. And here's the thing, like Carr becomes the second running back to transfer out. Marquis Stepp transferred to Nebraska in January, but I was hearing rumors a little bit about Carr in January as well. But Carr loves USC, and like people in his corner were telling him, hey, you probably should move on, you should probably go somewhere else. And he just loved USC so much that he didn't, and so he ended up getting his degree, and then he decided, you know, I think he could see the writing on the wall. We talked about a lot this spring, Keyonte Ingram. He was a dynamic back. I think he brought something different to USC's running back group. And so, we've seen throughout the last couple of years that the coaching staff really loves Avai Malapai and the versatility he can bring, not only in the run game, but pass protection, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he kind of got this sense that he basically was going to be on special teams and then get some carries behind Keyonte and Vivai. So I think for him, he decided this is kind of my last shot before I go to the league. And so I need to make sure that I'm getting my development. And so sources that I talked to heavily suggested that the fact that Dylan McCullough is back at Indiana was a big motivator for this decision. Now, it's not like a tampering situation, but it's something that he thought about because Dylan McCullough was his running backs coach in 2017 when he was a freshman, when he had that electric season
when
where everyone,
the best.
When everyone said, oh my gosh, who is this kid? And so, and granted, that was before his back injury, which really zapped his power. But I mean, if you're Stephen Carr, it makes the most sense because you have one more shot to get developed and to raise your draft stock. And from what we've seen in the past couple of years of the guys Stephen Carr has been coached by, Dylan McCullough was just great. Like, we saw him that first day in spring camp and we're like, wow, okay, he has these contraptions that we've never seen before. Yeah. Like, he has really high expectations. And so I think they have a good bond. And so that's where sources have suggested. I've heard other places as well where he could end up. And I know a lot of Oregon fans were my mentions trying to somehow convince Carr to come to Oregon. But yeah, so that was the development there. And you know, it's kind of sad because I think USC fans expected more from Carr in his time as a Trojan. And I think Carr did himself, but that back injury really hampered him. And then when you have, you know, you go from a guy like Dylan McCullough to Tim Drevno, who had 1 year of coaching as a running backs coach early in his career.
Yeah.
Like, to go from that, that's just, you're not getting developed in that sense.
That's stuck in your development for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that, you kind of feel for him in that sense where you don't have that continuity and you don't really have the best of the best coaching you. So that's where I feel sympathetic for the player. But just, you know, you think of Stephen Carr as a true Trojan, and so it's kind of sad to see him leave, but he's on his way. So we'll see where he ends up.
Yeah, someone that has been a joy to cover. I remember covering him in high school. Him and, you know, Najee Harris. And Najee Harris ends up being a first round. They're both the 5-star running backs from California.
Well, that's the crazy thing is when I was writing this story, you know, I just kind of went into this black hole of looking at the 2017 recruiting class. And if you look at, I mean, Carr came in as the composite number 3 running back.
Yeah.
And the guy ahead of him, Najee Harris, Alabama, everyone knows that, Cam Akers. And then behind him was DeAndre Swift at Georgia. Those guys are first round, second round draft picks.
Yeah.
And look at Carr, you're kind of looking, okay, can he get to the league? Like, is he going to be drafted or is he going to become a UDFA? And so, I don't know. It's interesting just to see how the trajectory of where they all entered coming into that 2017 class and then where they are now. Carr is kind of the outlier. But it's also, I think it's a combination of health and coaching. You know, I think it's both things. It's not just one.
And at USC hadn't been in a place that's really running the football lately either. So
yeah,
that doesn't help.
Yeah.
You know, you can put that in with coaching, but if you are at the spring game, Carr looked good. You
he
could argue
good.
He was
yeah.
the best running back that day. I mean, you know, Ingram had maybe the coolest play, but Carr was probably the better running back that day.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it was a gamer situation for Carr where he was in the Coliseum and suddenly the lights were turned on and he was ready to go. Like,
yeah.
He just looked like he was very comfortable out there. And so I'm curious what happened behind the scenes as far as post-spring, if there were any conversations had about, like, hey, this is where you stand. Because I know Mike Jinks said that they're going to go into fall camp and get that depth chart kind of figured out then. But I guess if you're Stephen Carr, you just don't want to wait that long. And if you have Keontae Ingram already in here, you know, it's kind of – I think it's – maybe the best move for him based on what he was picking up signal-wise.
Yeah. All right. Well, we wish Stephen Carr the best, and nice job breaking the story, Keely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see where he ends up. We're still kind of waiting to hear. We're hearing some stuff about Palaye Nolatoate, where he's going to go, like bouncing around. So there's some interesting, you know, former 5-star guys from USC in the transfer portal.
Yeah. And some more transfer portal rumbles, I'll say that. But,
rumble.
It's always a guessing game just because some people change their mind. Or and here's the thing, they have their mind made up and they go tell the coaches and the coaches dissuade them from transferring.
Right.
So it's always a process that you have to wait out and see.
You make some promises, whatever you're going to do. You know, I just got the scholarship distribution chart updated and then you get this big...
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to blow it up a little bit. We actually have some questions. We'll have some questions later on about some players, if they're still on the team or not. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But there's some other breaking news. This is with women's basketball. Now, you know, usually we talk USC women's basketball about half the show, right? Like, usually,
pretty much.
Maybe the first time we ever mentioned it. No, not ever. But, like, you know, they've not been great. Well, they have Mark Track. They brought it back for a second tenure. That's
historic
sort of
program, though.
Huh?
Historic program. Though.
Historic, yeah. We were at the...
One of the last things we did before the pandemic.
Yeah, the... what was the...
HBO, the Women's Hoops.
The documentary, yeah. I forget what the name of it was.
Wow, we suck.
Yeah.
Women of Troy.
Oh, it was just Women of Troy.
I think so.
That's a pretty tough one to remember. I do have a tank top jersey with my name on it from that.
I did
that,
too.
From
I did
that.
Too.
But yeah, you know... Cheryl Miller and all that, you know, their whole crew of the studs, you know, and still involved in basketball today. They're trying to get back to that. And for this is mostly a football podcast, right? So we're going to talk, you know, you were at the press conference. I want to get your thoughts on USC hiring Lindsey Gottlieb, no relation to Doug, who a lot of people know from the basketball world. I mentioned this on the Monday show with Harvey Hyde, but it just broke. You got to experience the press conference to kind of get your thoughts on that. She was the first, Power Five head coach for women's basketball to be hired by an NBA team. She did go to the Final Four with Cal,
yeah,
had a lot of success there. To me, I mean, it's just when we tell people, look, the athletic department's different now. They're going to make moves. I know this isn't the big move that most of the football fans want, but I think it showed some goodwill showing, like, look, this is a department that's willing to make big moves because this was a big move.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So this is something that I actually had been hearing about behind the scenes for a couple of weeks, and Lindsey kind of talked about it in her press conference. She didn't have any expectation to leave the NBA as soon as she did, because she came to the Cavs, I believe, 2 years ago. And so she was like, I'm here to challenge myself. I don't want to leave soon. And yet USC kind of identified her as one of the main candidates and went after her hard. They were aggressively pursuing her. And so finally, I mean, she described it as a transcendent opportunity, because she was like, it's the right place, the right time. And Mike Bone apparently seems very invested to get USC women's basketball back to where it once was. And so that really convinced her. And so, I mean, I know people are going to poo-poo this and be like, oh, women's basketball, who cares? But I think overall, it speaks to what USC's athletic department, their strategy has been hiring. I mean, it seems like overall they're trying to go out and get the best candidate for the position and not just have a familiar face. Oh, okay, the USC Rolodex, they sneezed on campus once, let's hire them. You know,
yes.
So I think the fact that they're identifying the right candidates, they're going out and getting them, should be comforting for USC fans, because if they're willing to be this aggressive and serious about something that is not, being frank, like not a revenue maker for the school, how do you think they're going to approach something that is very important to the school, its fan base, the revenue, et cetera, et cetera? You know, they're going to do a good job, it seems like, based on what we've seen so far. So, but she was really cool just hearing her press conference. You know, I have a lot of respect for women who do things in a male dominated field. So it was just really cool to hear her experiences. And she had a Zoom with the women's basketball team. They loved her. It seemed like it went really well from what I heard. And so, I mean, it seems like a great hire, and it made waves in the basketball world. Like, it made national headlines. And
yeah.
So if USC,
like, Woj was tweeting about it, right? Yeah.
Woj has 4.7 million followers, and USC had like a quote unquote Woj bomb. I mean, that in itself is great marketing for the school. I mean, these are all things that were thought about in the strategy in trying to bring her over. So, I mean, you want USC to be relevant in all areas if you're a USC fan, and this is a start in one direction, you know?
Yeah. And I think from the women's basketball point of view, you'd love to see them get back to winning national championships, being competitive. They just haven't really been competitive. I mean, if you're going to be recruiting somebody, you want tradition and all that stuff, that helps. But no one's been like, oh, yeah, I was an NBA coach. Like, no one's going to be recruiting you in college basketball that's like, oh, yeah, I've coached the Cavs. You know, like,
yeah. I was courtside for every game. I was scouting the Bulls, you know, like, right. Yeah.
Yeah, when we played LeBron, man, that was a weird, like what? You know, like,
well, it was so funny because she kept saying K-Love, meaning Kevin Love, just casually, you know, and there was a lot of NBA players that were like, so excited for you. You know, it was just really cool because she's definitely very respected, not only in the college basketball world, but in the NBA.
Yeah.
And so for USC to get someone of that caliber and bring them down to the college basketball level after being in the pro ranks, I think that's a big deal, because she definitely sounded like she didn't have any intention of doing so. And yet here she is. And so, I mean, here's the thing. USC also tried to really market it as, like, hey, look at what we do for our hires. You know, they have the video of the private jet, them like welcoming her at LAX and whatnot. And so everything can be, I mean, everything is a recruiting tool. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're not just recruiting, you know, football players. You're recruiting future coaches. And if you're showing that the treatment you give your women's basketball coach, you know, you're always recruiting. And I think that helped.
So the biggest pet peeve that I've had with USC.
Yes.
Over, since I've known you, Keely, probably since you were born, is what is, like, when they've made hires, it's just about, you know, who you know. Like, it's Urban Meyer bringing in Tim Tebow because they know him.
Yeah.
It's not let's get someone who's really good at their job. And I said, all you have to do, I would make the rule, like, don't hire anyone that was at USC, because basically you lost your privileges because you just kept hiring USC people.
Yeah.
Just hire someone that's good at their job. And I think a lot of the fans just assumed that that was going on. You're like, oh, they want to hire someone that, like, no, there's
that was
a lot
not,
of it's related. Yeah. That was definitely not happening.
Yeah.
And I think the goodwill that the new athletic department, Mike Bone and his crew, Brandon Sostin, all those guys, I think they proved it. When they were at Cincinnati, they made, you know, Luke Fickell has been a great hire, obviously. I forget the women's basketball coach name, but they brought in like a really good women's basketball coach there. They've, you know, they've done that. And they've proven that we're going to go out and not necessarily like, oh, that guy made a run for the Sweet 16 with Gulf Coast. They're not, you know, no knock on Andy Enfield. He had a great year this last
year. Which, by the way, is Lindsey Gottlieb's, they have the same agent.
They do have the same agent. It's pretty funny. Well, so, but in the past, they were like, oh, let's hire that person because they have an agent. You don't just necessarily talk to, like, oh, that guy made a run. Well, what was going to happen the year after they made that run? What happened the 2 years before? Was it just some magical thing that happened once in a lifetime and you're making a hire based on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it like, oh, you see what what they built up? What's the last program they left? What happened when they were gone? I think they put a lot of thought into the hiring process and not just getting – I mean, USC wasn't even going to get a hot name half the time. They were just like, here's your friend. But even taking it to another level, like, oh, that guy's hot right now. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to stay hot. It could just be this, you know, like I said, lightning in a bottle this one time. This is a, like – home run. You know, if you're going to try to get a women's basketball coach, it's going to be hard to find someone better than Lindsey Gottlieb, I would think. I mean, they're just for LA, just bring a lot to the table. I think if you're a football fan, just say, wow, okay, they're capable of really thinking about the best person for the job. That's why there's a better video department. That's why there's a better recruiting department. That's why the coaching staff is a hell of a lot better now, the assistant coaching staff, than it was two years ago before Bone got there. I get it. There's still one hire you want to see them make. That might happen sometime soon. Who knows? But it should give you some faith that you, when you hire an experienced athletic director that has done this before and run an athletic department and had these big budgets and made hires and fired people, having that experience matters. Like, yeah, you could have hired Pat Hayden. Maybe he would have been good, but you have no idea. He's never done that before. Lynn Swann certainly never done it before. That's the kind of – and so basically you were just going to keep status quo. Anyone that was already in the athletic department was going to be making the decisions anyway. This was good. You bring in someone from the outside, and they're actually going out and hiring people that are good at their job. And that's all I've ever asked them to do, and now USC's doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, just to remind people kind of got mad at us for previewing this kind of strategy that we've learned that the athletic department has. You know, we said early on, like, hey, they have a strategy for hiring, and we haven't seen that from previous admins. And so people kind of got mad at us, but this is another data point of, hey, look, they went out, they tried to evaluate who the best candidates are, and they got basically one of the best. So, I mean, if you're a USC fan out there going, yeah, okay, whatever, I don't like women's basketball. Sure. First of all, if you're a USC fan, you should support all USC sports. But second of all, you should just be happy that, hey, this looks like a competent athletic department that is doing their job. Like, that should be good for you as a USC fan.
And I think it helps the women's basketball program, obviously, getting a really competent head coach, not a retread, not just someone that they could, like, figure something out with, like, it's going to make people want to go to games. You're going to want to go to watch. When I was in school, I mean, I didn't know much about women's basketball. I had a couple of friends that we would play like in the Lions Center and stuff that were on the women's basketball team. And they're like, you know, they kick my butt. But we'd play with, like, I was on the club volleyball team. We'd play with some of the women's volleyball team. And it was fun. We'd have some good times with that. I could hang better with the volleyball than the basketball stuff. But Lisa Leslie was there. And like,
casual.
I wanted to see Lisa Leslie dunk. Like, that's all you heard about. So I would go to women's basketball games all the time. There was like some hook in there. And I used to go to women's basketball games. I think people will go again, you know, knowing that, oh, you got this NBA coach coming and coaching the basketball team.
I mean, what's the phrase? A rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
I mean, you want, if you're a USC fan, all the programs to be successful. It helps your school with its marketing. It's just a good thing. So this is just, don't be cranky, USC fans, is my PSA. It's a good thing. And continue on.
Yes. So we'll definitely follow Lindsay. I'm going to try to get her maybe on a little lunch with a Trojan maybe or something. We got to bring that back.
Put me on it.
You want to be on there too? Oh, yeah.
She's great. I want to talk to her.
Oh, we'll both.
I want to
pick
her brain.
Okay. We'll both do that. Yeah, it'd probably be better. I could even like produce it. You host it with her. Like,
no, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be like because I'm the female. It's just I want to talk to her.
Oh, okay. I would like to talk to her too. So yeah. It's really interesting.
Cool.
All right. We got to get to – so I love my buddy John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, all over the Pac-12, you know, commissioner search and things like that. Just does a good job. He comes on my podcast of champions. I co-host with David Woods. Plug. And, yeah, so we talk a lot of Pac-12. A lot of our news stuff is just like, you know, Wilner's hotline, like his newsletter stuff. But he'll come on and he says, oh, we love you guys. We listen to all the time. Like, why do you love us? Like, we just love you. But good dude. But he caused a little controversy on the peristyle. Recently, he came out with his post-spring, and it's not quite post-spring because UCLA and Stanford are still going through spring football.
It's crazy.
But divisional projections for the North and the South. And he did have Washington. He used to, in January, had Washington first, Oregon second. Those guys have swapped. And it's, you know, at the top, it's like Cal's third, and then you sort of whatever, what you want to do with Stanford, Oregon State, and Washington State. The South, he likes a lot more. He thinks it's a lot more competitive, which I think is true. But the controversy is he has Arizona State one. They were one back in January. He had USC 2 in January, drops USC to 3, and puts Utah up at number 2, and UCLA stays at 4 with Colorado staying at 5 and Arizona staying at 6. And, you know, Arizona has done a lot of good things in the offseason, but it's, you know, they're on a 12-game losing streak. It's going to take a while. He actually says the Trojans are a better bet for 4th place than 1st place, with 3rd as the most likely outcome. And I'll give you a few thoughts, Keely, and then kind of get your thoughts
sure.
here. I think USC is going to be the favorite in the South. I think John does a great job on this. You know, Utah's done a really nice job in the transfer market. They get Charlie Brewer over in from Baylor. Their lines are always going to be good. They're well coached. You know, Arizona State is sort of that hot team. They brought a lot of talent in from Southern California. You know, they do have Jaden Daniels. There's not a lot of returning quarterbacks in the Pac-12. Slovis and Daniels are two of the better ones, and DTR over at UCLA. But I think I don't feel this is going to be accurate. I do feel USC is going to be the favorite in the South. When you're talking about all the talent that's returning, when you talk about a much better and upgraded assistant coaching staff, yes, it's taken years for that to happen, but it did happen. I think USC is still going to be the team to beat. I mean, ASU, I like a lot, but they've just been the 7-5 team forever. Can they break through and get through that ceiling? Utah, we saw them win the division a couple of times, but they weren't able to win the Pac-12. USC is the only Pac-12 South team to win the Pac-12. I think in 10 years, like the North has won it 9 of 10 times or something like that, which is crazy. And I think UCLA is improving. I like the way they ran the ball. I like the way they were playing defense by the end of the year, but I just don't think the talent's going to be there. To me, it's USC as the clear favorite in the South. I just feel like they're going to win that. Can they go through and win the Pac-12? I'm not sure. The schedule's set up really well. There's no Friday games. They don't have to play Oregon. They don't have to play Washington. I'm not getting where John's talking about USC finishing 3rd here. So. Yes, the offensive line could have some issues. There's enough talent all across the board, I think, to make up for that. I think you're going to see improved defense, better special teams. If the offense can get back to where it was, a little 2019-ish, I still think USC has to be the clear favorite in the South. They might not win it. And if they don't win the South, I think it's like donezo, like this coaching staff has to go, or at least, but I feel like they're going to be the favorite. I feel like they're going to win the South in 2021. What do you think, Keely?
Yeah, I feel like the South is USC's to lose. Like, it's something that they will fumble away rather than they'll come in 3rd
yes.
somehow. And I feel like Wilner liked Jaden Daniels better than Keen Slovis based on his write-up. It was interesting. And I think also the offensive line play came into play as why USC's 3rd. And I get that. I think the fact that we still don't really have a clear idea of who that starting 5 is going to be is a little concerning. But USC and its talent, I know we say it every season, but there's just something about the way they pull out games. I mean, the fact that they won last-minute games in the majority of 2020, I think it just speaks to how this team is talented. And I think the thing that's underrated is I think this team is really bonded. Seems like there's a lot of chemistry, and Clay Helton said so as much. And with Steiner, I think the workouts have really helped as well. Yeah. So I also am just intrigued by the defense. I think another year under their belt and having a real spring camp really helped develop this defense. So I think that will kind of help maybe the issues we see over on the offensive side of the ball. But yeah but I definitely think the South is USC's to lose. I wouldn't say third for USC.
Yeah, the fact that they're closer to fourth than first. I'm not buying that from John. We'll have to get him on the podcast and kind of get his thoughts on that. But sort of like USC does have that talent advantage, but then now you also have, you know, competent assistant coaches all over the place, which you said you make those good hires.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you're a blackjack, but you're the dealer. Like USC's the dealer. So like even if you get a bad hand, the other player's got to go first and they could bust. You know, like there's just talent gives you that extra edge where you don't bring your A game. You didn't really have a great game plan, whatever it is. But, Drake Jackson just made a sack, or Drake London just made a ridiculous one-handed catch. It's sort of like that wasn't coaching. That wasn't really anything. But you just have some dudes that other guys don't have. And USC has guys like that too. So, like, I think – all those factors, yes, easily USC could not win the South, but I can't say they'd be closer to fourth than first.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's the thing we've said with Clay Helton teams every single season. There's what USC can do and should do and what they end up doing. And sometimes you can't predict which way they're going to go. And that's why we mentioned the talent factor. You can't predict for that. You know, you can't predict for a Drake London one-handed catch at the end zone of the Arizona State game. You know, there's things where you can't just
on
predict.
On fourth and 15 or
yeah,
that
like
was,
you're not going to be able to, the odds tool will never tell you that that's going to happen, but it does because USC is talented and can pull it out somehow. So, I mean, that's the thing. What USC will do and what they should do and what they can do, a lot of the time, those are different answers. So we shall see.
We will see. But we love you, John, but I'm not going to agree with that one. All right. That was a lot of newsy stuff. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and do some questions. Back in a minute.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle podcast. Keila, we got a... You want me to start with a voicemail and then
sure,
jump into the rest? Okay, we'll do a voicemail here. Speaking of the run game, I think this might have came in before the news broke.
Okay.
So if they mentioned Stephen Carr, you know, just letting you know it was an earlier voicemail. But
no
here
worries.
Hello, this question is for Keely and Ryan, and I'm going to leave another one because I realized my last voicemail was way too long. So anyways, basically my question is do you think that Clay Helton would actually allow for a situation in which Vi Melapai and Stephen Carr are not the top two backs? I know you guys have been very impressed with Keontae. I was as well. Granted, I've only been able to watch one practice, but so that's not really saying all that much. But it does seem like he can bring something both in from a physicality perspective and an open field perspective that I'm not sure I've seen from the other backs. But do you think that it's actually practical that he could beat those two guys out who are, you know, just politically and in past SC teams, it seems like political matters, seniority matters, who you are in terms of the head coach's opinion of you matters. So anyways, fight on, Jason Longhorn Country.
What's up, Jason? Yeah.
Jason.
So Stephen Carr is probably not going to win the job now.
Considering he's in the portal, yes. Yes, that's accurate. I mean, the fact that he entered the portal should probably give you an idea of how they're treating this. And I think, you know, I do agree with what Jason said. Like, we've seen in the past where seniority, veteran status will get you more reps than maybe the best player. And so while I do believe that happens, I think the running back position was so poor. They played so poorly last season that you can't afford to have something like that happen. And the fact that they went to the portal and got someone like Keyonte Ingram shows that they at least mean business as far as like, hey, we need to change something. And so, I mean, the jinx stuff sounded a little bit like coach speak prior to camp. Mm. And then the fact that he kind of followed up on it in camp, and then we're seeing Stephen Carr enter the portal, it just seems like, okay, they actually mean it. Now, granted, we can see things in spring and then suddenly they change in fall, but I think they do mean it, at least for the running back position, where, hey, you need to produce and you need to make things up, or make up yards. So we'll see. But I do think the fact that Stephen Carr is in the portal should tell you something about what they mean or their mindset going forward.
Yeah, and I would say when we went out to practice, and if you didn't know anybody and you were just like a football fan and you watched, Ingram was the one that was standing out in practice the most. And you're like, oh, okay. And players know that and players see that too. But, you know, to Stephen Carr's credit, he looked really good in the spring game. And if he felt confidence in his abilities, but if he's like, you know what, Ingram's a new toy and they're going to want to use him, and Vavai's like the favorite, like you're never going to, you know, get off of him, I'm going to be the odd man out. You know, maybe that's part of the mindset there. But
yeah, I felt like before Keyonte came to USC, Carr provided a different element to the room. But Keyonte is almost like, and this is no offense to Carr, but like an elevated version of Carr, where he's a little bit healthier. He has a little bit more oomph to him, you know? And so I think that's the difference, is that he's no longer the unique back in the room where he provides something different than the other guys. I think he realized that, hey, you know, I might be third now. So we'll see. And I mean, it's rough because who knows if he was actually more healthier during his Trojan career where he would be now, his development, but it's just been a bumpy road for him health-wise.
Yeah, imagine if he didn't have offensive line coach as a running back coach in his second
year.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not fair to anyone, yeah. You know, so it's rough.
Those bad decisions, like, you know, that would never, like, when we get back to the Gottlieb stuff, like, that would never happen.
No.
Now, like, if Clay Helton wanted to hire someone like that to do a job like that, that wouldn't happen.
They would not let it fly that your offensive line coach in waiting is suddenly going to become your running back coach.
Yeah.
While you still have your offensive line coach that you know you want to replace there. Like, what is happening?
that's just poor leadership, poor decision making.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, some of the residual damage, I guess you could say, is a guy like Stephen Carr. And maybe that's part of the reason, you know, if USC makes an actual running backs coach hire in 2018, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Maybe Stephen Carr's, you know, better off, and he's left the NFL by now. Who knows?
And that's what I was saying. Like, it's there's so many variables to this, because I definitely think their development was stunted when you don't have a legitimate running backs coach. And that's not a diss on Tim Drevno, but that wasn't his specialty. No. So you're not going to be able to be developed as well as you probably could have.
Yeah. So I feel bad, because what we do here a lot is a decision gets made, and we would, like, as the decision gets made, before we even know the results, we'll be like talking about it on the podcast, like, why the hell are they doing that? You know? And, you know, it's not going to happen like right away, but, you know, it could be years later and you're like, yeah, wow, that was just terrible. It's not hindsight. It's like, we told you this was going to be terrible, like, when you made the decision, and then it happens. And you see, it's just, if you make the right decisions, it's going to, you know, it's like tilling the soil and, you know, picking the weeds and putting the right seeds down. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, later on, you're going to have these great crops. And it's like, well, I let the weeds go there. Well, my lettuce isn't coming in as good because, like, the weeds are drought. Like, whatever it is, like, you want to make those really good decisions. Hiring, you know, Lindsey Gottlieb is a really good decision. And I don't know if they'll win a national championship, but that's everything going forward is now based off of a very good decision.
And you're putting yourself in a place to succeed.
Yes. And hiring your offensive line coach in waiting, as you put it, to be the running backs coach because you didn't really want to go out. And it's like, you're kind of upset that you made this nice hire from Indiana, the best hire Clay Helton probably made that was, you know, of his own volition there to bring in Dylan McCullough. You get quote unquote burned because he leaves after a year, but that's what you want. Like, go out and get the next really good one, not, oh, we're going to bring Tim Drevno back because he's going to take over the offensive line eventually. Like, that's just lazy and just not – that's not smart.
And to give context, that was the season after the Cotton Bowl where we showed up and saw the Ohio State linemen and went, okay, this game's over.
Yeah.
You know, like, right. It was just – they were manhandled in the trenches, and that should have been sign number whatever that, hey, maybe it's time to make a change. And granted, like, from what I've heard – Clay Helton didn't really have a lot of resources to be like, hey, let's mix this up and do this and have enough to bring in this running backs coach. So I don't entirely blame Helton on that. But still, there were some obvious moves that were not made. And I feel like I talk about it all the time on this podcast. I think Neil Calloway is the thing I just say over and over again. But talk about not putting down the right soil. Look at offensive line recruiting. Look at the offensive lineman that USC has right now. Why are you going to the portal for left tackle? Why did you have Elijah Vera Tucker move over to left tackle? You know what I mean? I'm going on a rant right now, but there's so many dominoes based on these decisions, you know?
100%.
And it affects so much. And so, I don't know.
You remember what happened in 2018? Did they have a good season?
I don't think it was good, Ryan. Don't think it was good, no.
Yeah. Well, anyway, don't mean to harp on all this stuff.
Yeah, sorry.
But here we are. Like, that's why. Well, Stephen Carr... You made a bad decision in 2017 or whatever, and in 2021, Stephen Carr's transferring. And part of the reason, for sure, is that decision you made in 2017 or 2018, whatever it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's a two-way street, like I said. Carr also had some issues as well.
There's more to it, but, like, you give yourself a better chance to keep your five-star running back if you had made better decisions and put, you know, better people around him. He did a really good job when he was a freshman, and then after that, not so much.
Yeah. Well... Shall we jump into questions?
Yeah, yeah.
We have an email from Gordon, or sorry, it's a text, who said, spring practices had no mention of Frank Martin and Bernard Schirmer, who also sat out last season due to COVID. Are they still on the team? Transfer portal, question mark. How about Trevor Trout, medically retired? And he says he wants us to send him a text back, but Gordon, that's not how it works. We're not a text line. We're a podcast line.
We're a podcast line, so we're going to talk about it on the podcast. So Frank Martin, I believe, had some – we put some stuff in the war room on this. It was I put it in there so I should remember. I think it was some COVID stuff and he was
– COVID issues, yeah.
Yeah, but he should be back.
Yeah, but he did opt out for the season, 2020 season.
2020, yeah.
Just and like so did Bernard Schirmer.
Schirmer. And then Schirmer, I'm not sure on, you know.
Schirmer, we've never gotten a good read on of where he is. Is he practicing? Okay, he was here one day. He's here not – that day. He's kind of in the Solomon Tuiala poo-poo category where, like, if we see it consistently, then we'll start talking about it. But so far, we haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And then Trevor Trout, he unfortunately just had a back issue that never got fixed, and he was forced to medically retire, which is rough. It's always hard for guys to transition out of sports that way, that quickly or abruptly. So, so he is medically retired.
He's still on Twitter, though. You want to follow him? He's pretty active on the tweets.
Sports guy. He's doing SJC or I don't know. Chris did it. It's the Sports Journalism Institute.
Okay.
It's a little like intensive over the summer.
Nice.
So, yeah. Good stuff.
Thanks for that, Gordon.
Yeah. Thanks, Gordon. Sorry we didn't text you back. We had a question from our buddy Stephen Poway who said, thinking back on last week's NFL draft, I was impressed that Elijah Vera Tucker went as high as he did. I know this calls for speculation, but where do you think he would have been selected if he had not played last season? Put differently, how many slots do you think he moved up by playing so well this past season and giving scouts a few more games of high quality quote unquote tape? Also, were you surprised by any of the USC players' selection location in the draft, high or low? Thanks, Stephen Poway.
Hey, Steve. So I would say there's no formula for C, everyone should come back, or C, everyone should opt out, or the three Pac-12 first-round draft picks were all opt-outs. Elijah Vera Tucker is the only one that came back. You know, Penny Sewell, Joe Tryon, you know, they opted out, and they were still had enough tape, they still had enough measurables that they were first-round picks. I don't think Elijah Vera Tucker would have been, for sure. I think just showing that he can play – the left tackle spot showed a lot of versatility. He might be a guard in the NFL, but he showed that he can play out there. You don't get to carry many offensive linemen, you know, so you can't just have, like, this guy's only right guard. Like, you don't have anyone that's like that. Like, they, well, he could play some center too, or he could play, you know. You need some versatility there. He brings that to the table. So I think he's someone that definitely helped himself. There's other guys that didn't need it. You know, Jay Toffoli going like the first pick in the fourth round. If he played, would he have gone higher? Yeah, probably. You know, it just depends. And you know, USC's not been – people aren't getting a bump for, hell, they played at USC. Like, you're getting a little bump for you play at Alabama right now for good reason because they got a lot of talented players.
Yeah.
You know, some of, you're not really getting that right now because for some of the development that's been happening at USC. So we'll see. But I think he is one that definitely helped his stock by coming back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you look at him specifically, he only had 1 year as a starter on tape. And that's not really enough. And I know USC in their pitch to get him to come back use that against him. Like, hey, you don't have a lot of tape. And so I think they even brought in a former NFL GM and said, like, hey, we need more to evaluate you. This is what it's going to look like if you don't play. So they really worked him to come back. And I think part of it was just because he just didn't have a lot of reps. And yeah. So it definitely helped. And like you said, Ryan, the versatility always helps when you can show scouts that you can do multiple things.
Yeah, it was only six games, but it was enough. You know, yeah. Like that was a good, like, okay, we get it. Like, you can play
yeah.
tackle.
Yeah, because he was great at guard. I mean, the PFF rankings were off yeah. the charts, but just to be like, hey, not only can I do guard, but look at me shift outside and
yeah.
still
but
be
But those PFF numbers definitely helped him. Like,
definitely,
like, you
yeah.
know, like, oh, you're the best guard in the country? Okay, that's good.
Yeah, definitely helps. And then were you surprised by any of the USC players' selection location, high or low?
Not really. Like, you know, it's just – I know there was a lot of talk about some second-round stuff. I thought, you know, maybe like Amon-Ra St. Brown would be – like a third round guy or Jay Toffoli or something, but I didn't think there were going to be guys going like earlier than that. But the fact that everyone dropped to the third day was a little surprising. But I thought you might get a third rounder or two.
I thought Amon-Ra was going to be selected before Jay Toffoli. That's actually what we had in our pre-write, so we had to change that around when it happened. But,
oh yeah,
yeah. But that, I think that was the only surprise for me there. But
he's where he ended up in Detroit, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, they got a good receiving core. They got Jared Goff though, right? So yeah. You're gonna have to, you know.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens there.
I mean, we saw Amon-Ra as a true freshman in PRPs, and we're like, that kid is unreal. Like, that can't
right.
be a freshman. Like, he was a professional when he stepped on campus. So I'm sure that he'll get some run there.
he's someone that's actually, you know, physicality wise, like, just, I mean, he's been weightlifting since he was a little kid, right?
Since he was two. Just
well,
kidding.
Now you're going with grown men. So there's some of the advantages he would have in college where you're outlifting everybody.
Sure.
You're probably not going to get in the NFL, but his talent just oozes through.
His work ethic.
I think he's going to do really well there. He's not, you know, there's not stuff that you write down like, oh, he ran a 4.25. Like, no, he didn't do that. Or he's 6.5. No, he's not, like, but there's stuff that you watch. And I think when he gets to practice, and it usually doesn't take long. Players know. You watch a couple of practices and you're like,
yeah.
That kid's got it.
Yeah.
And I think my gut is that's what's going to happen for him in Detroit. But they do have, I mean, they have some really good receivers there. So
yeah.
It's not like his work, it's not like he's going to step in and
sure,
he's got
yeah.
his work cut out for him.
Yeah. But I always would rather bet on work ethic than just straight up talent in the professional.
Yeah. And he's
ranks.
Got both, but yeah.
He's got both, but yeah. I'm just saying his work ethic was something that I haven't seen from a freshman when he came in. So. We got a question from our buddy Eric in Duck Country. A question, and then he clarifies on something he said that turned into a crazy Ryan analogy. So we'll get to that. He says, Ryan and Keeley, what is the percentage chance that the physicality of spring practice carries over into the fall?
Eric.
Well, when we put it in our formula of Clay Helton-isms, divide by two. And I'm just kidding.
I think so it's not going to be the same. I feel like what Todd Orlando said was all true about culture and all of that. But once you get to fall camp, the beginning of it, yeah, I think you're going to see maybe the first couple of weeks. But once they get into game prep, I don't think they're not going to be physical practices, but they're not going to be like what they were in the spring because you actually are preparing for an opponent. But
yeah.
I think the first couple of weeks when they're kind of figuring out the depth chart, whatever, finalizing things, you'll see more, probably more spring-like. They just can't have the complete drop-off like we've had before going into mock game week where it's just like patty cake out there. You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest difference is you're not going into May where you can recover and guys can kind of rest the bumps and bruises. Like, you're heading into a 12-game schedule, which you haven't played in 2 years at that point. So it's going to be different. They're going to have to manage things. But I don't think, based on, I don't think Todd Orlando would accept any type of, like, quote-unquote patty cake, as you said, Ryan.
Yeah.
Because that's just, they're all about culture and physicality. And I think Vic Soto would, like, rip a fence out of the Howard Jones field or something, being so frustrated about that. So we'll see. But the thing that will be interesting is that there's been reports that the NCAA is going to come out with changes to fall camp requirements as far as like full tackling pads and stuff like that. So they might pull back a little bit what teams can do. So we'll see if that affects USC's plan there. But it was interesting to see. I mean, every time we saw USC, they were in full pads. Whether or not they were fully tackling, they switched, but they were always in full pads, which was not something we've seen.
We've never seen that, anything like that.
Yeah. So that was at least different. And then Eric clarified. He said, last week, I wasn't suggesting that other ADs and Pac-12 commissioner would pressure USC into firing Clay Helton. I was asking if you think that they all would secretly wish USC had an elite head coach because it would mean more money in TV contracts and millions of dollars for each school.
Interesting. This caused like a whole bunch of controversy.
Don't start.
You want me to start?
Don't even start. You're going to cause more controversy with the controversy.
I know. but, okay, so would they secretly want...
Technically, you caused the controversy, but it's...
I just mentioned somebody on the podcast and then saw them at practice and said, hey, man, I mentioned you. And
Oh, gosh.
But it wasn't like, you know, it was just like using it as an example. But anyway, and then I guess there was a game of telephone going on and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Okay. Anyway.
You may explain more?
No. Ryan.
So, okay. So would they secretly want USC to have an elite head coach? I mean, I think if you're like Oregon State and you want the Pac-12 to be better, you secretly should want USC to be better. You'd rather USC be good. Like if you're Oregon State, who are the two most likely like torchbearers right now? Oregon and USC. You'd rather have USC be the torchbearer than Oregon. You don't want your rival being that. So I think there's some aspects of it, but there wouldn't be some kind of meeting where like we need USC to hire a better head coach, which
I don't think he was ever suggesting that. I think that's what he said.
The way he worded it, though, it sounded like that.
No,
I believe.
Eric, let's be nice to Eric.
Oh, we know we're nice to him. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is just Eric being like, all of us USC fans are wishing USC had a better head coach. I bet you our opponents are even wishing they had a better head coach.
It makes sense in theory, though. It does. Like, once again, the rising tide lifts all boats. I think that's what he's getting to. Like, if USC is doing better, you kind of ride the coattails if you're a lower program in the conference. I think that's what he's getting at. And I could see that theory.
I just don't like, if you go through the program, like, okay, you're UCLA's athletic director, like Martin Jarman, do you think he gives a crap if USC keeps Clay Helton? Like, no, he doesn't care. Like, he might worry if USC went and hired like Urban Meyer, like, oh crap, now I have to, but.
Well, then he's inherently caring about Clay Helton.
Yeah, but I mean, he would rather, he doesn't want USC to have a great head coach. Like, so he's going to be more selfish about it. So he wouldn't care. He's not someone that's going to be like, man, I wish USC had a better head coach. Like, he's not. I don't think anyone in the South is hoping that. Like, Arizona's like, yeah, we suck. Man, I just hope USC gets better because that will help. You know, like, no, I don't think that's happening. Like, Oregon State, possibly, because you need someone good. You'd rather it not be Oregon. But, like, Oregon and Washington don't want USC to have a great head coach. I don't think Washington State would give a rip. Cal and Stanford wouldn't. So I would say... of all the schools, maybe Oregon State would wish that secretly, and that's it.
Sorry, Eric, if we didn't answer it again. He probably regrets asking this question and clarifying. Right. So, sorry, Eric.
You know, if you tried twice and no one's answering it well, maybe it's your question, Eric.
Ryan, gotta be nice.
We love Eric and Duck
Eric
Country.
Eric and Duck Country, yes. Yeah. We also have Brett C. from Knoxville, Tennessee, which I love saying because it rhymes. He said, hey, Keely and Ryan, what's your prediction for the new Pac-12 commissioner from John Wilner's article about Oliver Luck? Like to hear your thoughts. Brett C.
Yeah, we could know some stuff this week. Wilner, as of last week, had Luck as a 3-1 favorite. He doesn't like putting odds in there. His reporting has been good on this because there's been some interesting facts to come out. Like, not every president wanted Larry Scott gone. So just that alone
is alarming.
Yeah. Like, do you feel confident that they're going to get this right? They did get a good search firm. Unfortunately, the whole executive committee was Pacific Northwest based, but now they bring in...
Not anymore.
Yeah, now they got Colorado, they got USC, and you need like an LA school to be involved in this, so that's good. But, you know, USC's pretty much got a rookie president, right? So, I mean, careful, but at least you have USC representation, you have Pac-12 South representation, but everyone has different ideas, and there's a lot of people that are leaning towards the former AD side, where you know campuses and you know that environment, and other ones want the more, you know, the TV contract person and someone that's more on the executive sports side. But that's pretty much what Larry Scott was, and that was a disaster. But it seems like they're staying away from anyone that had to do with Larry Scott, which is good. It's not good that a lot of the guys aren't on the same page, the people aren't on the same page, the men and women of the committee and all of that stuff. The fact that not everyone wanted Larry Scott gone is enough to show that's like, man, they're all over the place. I think Wilner's been consistent with football has to be number one, two, and three. Like, if you have to get football right, and if you can get football right and you're not the best at women's basketball, you're still going to be better at women's basketball because football's right. And I feel like that's where they need to go, but it doesn't seem like everyone's on the same page. You know, Oliver Luck seems like a really good candidate, but who knows at this point? You know, this is where you trust the people that make a lot of money and are really smart to do something correct. And I don't have a ton of confidence that they're going to do something correct.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I understand why the presidents would want to be involved and in charge of this decision, but they come from such a different world where there's nuance in what you need from this commissioner, and I don't think that they would really understand it if they're not just immersed in college sports as much as the ADs and the athletic departments are. So I don't know. Apparently they've been really tight-lipped. Like, not a lot of stuff is leaked about it. I've heard things about like mystery candidates and people who, you know, are kind of outside the box. So we'll see, but I mean, it's interesting because like the CEO group and the presidents were part of the whole COVID plans and whatnot. And I know there was some conflict with that about like they were very high education minded about things versus like, hey, this is sports and you have to think a certain way. Does that make sense, Ryan? Like it's sometimes a little clash of the difference in mindsets.
100%. There's a lot of that. And that, you know, it's athletics, not their most important task. And the stuff at the university makes a lot more money than athletics, but athletics is like the front door, right? It's like the, you know, the curb appeal for your university. So it does have a big impact. And he only lists two candidates, really. He has Oliver Luck is 3-1, and then Randy Freer, who used to be he ran Fox Sports and Hulu at 7-2. The rest of the people, mystery candidate X, mystery candidate Y, mystery candidate Z. A package deal, which was talked about, which just seemed like a horrible idea. But he does feel like May 17th is the important day, and we're recording this on May 12th, that it would be decided by then because the Pac-12 presidents are scheduled to hold their annual spring meeting that day. But it could that could be something that kind of jolts the process. So we'll see.
But, we shall see indeed.
Yeah, but thanks for the question.
Mm-hmm. And we got one last question. It's from our buddies, Dan, class of 1962, and his dog, Oliver. He says, hi, Ryan and Keeley. Thanks for clarifying the use of a scout or service team. As to the slew of injuries, when John McKay was head coach, winning 4 national championships, he always had players ankles taped for practices as well as games, and his offensive linemen all wore knee braces. Aside from Anthony Munoz's major knee injury under John Robinson, I don't remember a slew of injuries, especially ankle and knee injuries, during the McKay and Robinson eras. Does the current training staff tape ankles for every practice and game, as well as require offensive line knee braces? Also, don't discount Orlando as a potential head coach because McKay was a Don Clark assistant, as Robinson was a McKay assistant before they combined to win 5 national championships. Fight on and win, Dan, class of 1962.
Hey, Dad. Yeah, Todd Orlando, I think, could be a candidate for sure. He was a hot name for quite a while and then, you know, got fired at Texas. But I think if he has a good year at USC, he'll be up there just like Graham Harrell was if he has a really good year. Still a lot of ankle taping going on. I don't think that's changed.
Yeah,
there's a lot of technology that goes into some of this stuff and a lot of data.
I mean, they wear the catapult system, which is like it looks like a sports bra underneath
When you see guys take off their things, you're like, Why is that guy wearing a sports bra?
Yeah, it's actually like it's a little like a device that counts how many steps they do, how many miles they run. Yeah. And that's why like guys on special teams, sometimes they'll take them off of it just for one practice because they're running too many miles of practice. So they definitely have a lot of data tracking things. But
it's like a Fitbit on steroids, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, ankles are taped, knee braces. I mean, what I heard coming out of Andrew Millick's knee injury, he swore that his knee brace saved him from a bigger knee injury. He came out with an MCL, I believe. So so there you go. So I think it started with Tim Drevno. He made all his offensive linemen wear knee braces when they didn't even want to, and I think that carried over. So
yeah, it's been pretty common. Like, it's something I don't really even notice anymore. But it's not something that was like a McKay era thing that went away. Like, guys would just wear them all the time. There could be some dudes that don't. There could have been some periods where some of the guys weren't wearing knee braces. But for the most part, there's always seemed to be out there. But that stuff is happening. Yeah, like a lot of the old school stuff that was happening before, getting your ankles taped and all that stuff, like that still happens. Now you got some of those like the kinesiology tape.
KT tape, yeah.
Yeah, like there's things like that that people put on. They always look kind of funky. Like
when, a shoulder brace, yeah, people wear like, under pads, yeah.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff, yeah.
There's less eye black. I don't know if they
like, which I'm kind of sad about.
Eye black is badass.
I liked it. Like, that was college football to me growing up.
Yeah.
Like,
you got to have some cool eye black.
Yeah.
I'm not a big, like, I don't
write the
notice.
Area code, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. 619 was a, yeah, I'm not a person that's like, oh my God, they're wearing black socks. Like, I would go out and watch practice and I wouldn't know what color socks. And then, like, if Dan Weber was around, he would tell us, like, did you believe the spats? I'm like, I didn't notice. But there's some people that really do. And they're like, that makes a difference. I'm
yeah.
Like, Harvey Hyde is big on, like,
uniformity.
Yeah. Wanting everyone to be, like, you know, have your jersey tucked in and stuff. And I get that more than, like, the fashion statement of everyone should have black socks or whites or whatever it
sure.
is. Like, I, you know, that doesn't bother me as much.
It's actually something Reggie Bush harped on the Utah game when the Fox Sports crew was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
During warmups, he, like, kind of ragged on USC for not looking uniform. I was like, oh, okay.
And that's, like, when Harvey Hyde talks about it, you know, like, boomer, whatever, like, yelling things at the guy. It's like, and people would, like, talk about his record. He was a head coach in, you know, major college football. Like, if he was 0-100 as the head coach, he still was a head coach. Like, he's gone through meetings. He's, you know, you have a different perspective than people like us that have never been a head coach in college football.
Yeah.
Good or bad or whatever. It's just about the fact that he's done that. He's hosted meetings. He's tried things that worked, things that didn't. You know, I think all of that, you know, is important. You're like, hey, you've done it before, but you know, it's one of those things. But Reggie Bush as a player now, he's 15 years or whatever more, you know, outside of college, but I think that holds more weight when he says, yeah, the guys didn't even look like they were on the same team, which I get. Like, that made sense to me. Like, you know what? It does sort of show if you're a little buttoned up. And maybe Harvey Hyde and Reggie Bush were saying it in a different way, but they were kind of saying the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a culture thing. It can be, but it doesn't have to be the end-all, be-all, you know?
Right.
There's other tools to have a strong culture, so...
But if you're like, if you're nonchalant like that, like if Alabama came out like that, they wouldn't. But if they did, and then they dominate, and then they don't commit a lot of penalties, and they don't turn the ball over,
then no one cares.
No one gives a crap, right?
Yeah. Cool.
And Pete Carroll's teams had a lot of nonchalance about them, but they still committed a lot of penalties, but they were really good.
Yeah.
I think for USC, you come out and look like that, and you commit a lot of penalties. And you turn the ball over and you don't look like things are buttoned up. You're like, then you should probably look like you're buttoned up going into it just so like it shows that, oh, you know, we're really trying. Because if you don't look like things are buttoned up and then you play like things aren't buttoned up, then guess what? Things probably aren't buttoned up.
Well, it's like the chicken or the egg. Are you not buttoned up because you're not buttoned up? Like, yeah. That's why you don't play well? You know. But I mean, it's the same thing with like guys smiling or dancing. Like, if they play well, who cares? But
yeah,
it's understandable if they're like not focused. So it is what it is.
Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. I do like to act like you've been there before. Like celebration stuff are cool. But like there's something more badass about like scoring a touchdown and like giving the ball to the ref or just putting it down and walking away like, yep, that happened.
I'm a medium reaction type of gal. Like, yeah. Show off a little bit. It's football. It's fun, but don't be like crazy. The thing I can't stand is like, the ball was not even, it wasn't even catchable, and the DBs are like freaking out like they did something. It's like, okay, that wasn't you. But
or, you know, it's like third and 14 and some guy rips off like a 20-yard run and you tackle him and you're like celebrating. You're like, you just gave up a third and 14. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
That was a nice hit, but he got 20 yards on you and maybe they moved not. The chip.
Yeah, context like, is important for your celebration. How about that?
So, yeah. And I never want to begrudge like players for celebrating, but yeah, sometimes when you're celebrating, it's like, okay, you're down 45. Like, why are you like,
that's what I'm saying. Context is important. Like, maybe not right now. Like, I'm all for celebration. It's sports. You're young. Go for it. But maybe not when you're down by
it's
that
like
much.
Yeah, like maybe it's an ironic celebration, like sometimes like if you're
I don't think so.
Yeah, like if I'm playing volleyball and like we're getting our ass kicked and then but I go up and just crush a ball, I'd be like, yeah, like okay, we're still down 15, but whatever, you know, like
sure,
I, you
sure,
know,
sure, sure,
feel good
yeah.
about it. But it would be more of an ironic cheer. Like,
yes, of course.
Like, hey, I finally did something or whatever, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah, so maybe not crawl out of AT&T tunnel before you face Alabama is what you're saying.
Probably, yeah, that's that, yeah, that's just like that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that was not
good. I don't remember what happened that day, but it probably wasn't good.
No, I think USC fans have blacked it out a little bit.
We had a couple of years in a row, right, going to AT&T Stadium.
We did, Cotton Bowl, Alabama.
We were supposed to go again.
I know that we didn't.
Yeah,
pandemic.
All right, well, that's good, good stuff.
Thank you, sir.
We kind of went a while.
We did
a lot of talking. We haven't hung out for a bit, so it's good to
a little delirious for this spot, but you know.
Yeah, so keep sending the questions. We do appreciate that. We're probably not going to do as many like Harvey Hyde shows. Are you guys going to do more like Family Feuds or probably not as many?
Well, I'm going on vacation soon, so.
Oh, yeah, Keila's going on vacation. Oh, so I got to get like a co-host for a couple weeks. But yeah, we'll keep them going in some semblance of whatever, and we'll
semblance of whatever.
Yeah, are you around for Tunnel Vision this weekend or no?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So I think we're gonna have to like recruit Chris. I might have to take the Keeley seat over.
Yeah.
Or it could just be me and Shotgun, and then he could maybe be in this room, and I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, Keeley needs a vacation. She hasn't been on vacation
yeah,
for
like
a
three
couple
years.
Of years. Gerard, I don't think ever goes on vacation.
No, he does. He just doesn't leave.
And he doesn't tell anyone. He doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
Like, I would tell him, like, Gerard, go somewhere. Go on vacation. I'm like, eh. I'm like, just go do someone. Like, just get away. I'm like, nah. He just, that's not him.
Yeah. But it's May. It's kind of a dead period right now for football right now. So.
It is. And normally you would be, May evaluations were going on. We still have a dead period. So it's like football's ended, like spring, draft. And no really recruiting until June. So
yeah,
it's,
I mean, the coaches are on vacation. Players went home after finals. Today's the last day of finals for USC. So kind of low key. May is usually the slowest month out of the 12 months that we have.
Yeah, but it's even slower this year because there's not even the evaluations.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so it's like
no
engineered
recruiting.
To be slower.
Yes, and it's even worse. But congrats to everyone out there graduating across the country. Players, you know, students, wherever. Like I think graduation is like the 15th for USC. Is it this?
Yes.
Weekend?
Yeah, I believe. Well, I mean, it's like a whole week and they're doing like different times. It's a whole strategy because of COVID.
Oh, so they're like, yeah, you used to have it like all in one day. Like, oh, you can do your engineering one in the morning and then the main ceremony later or
the main ceremony in the morning and then you go to your
major
satellite
afterwards.
Ones. Yeah.
It's been a little longer since I graduated. From
4 years to the day, Ryan, for me. I'm
what's
old.
Happening for me?
I'm so old.
Oh my God. Mine's.
Your diploma's right there, Ryan. You can reference it.
Yeah. I mean, I had my 25th. Anniversary from college
Yikes.
A couple of years ago, so Yikes. Like I'm approaching 30. Like, oh, that's bad.
I
for undergrad,
okay, yeah, there you go.
My master's is 25 too. Shoot, because that was 95. Yeah,
when I was born, young at heart, Ryan. You're young at heart.
True. Oh man, I'm getting old here. All right, well, let's just wrap things
depressing
up.
Into the pond.
Thanks to Trader Joe's. Thanks to my co-host, Keeley Yore, and hopefully she has a very fun vacation. Congrats again to our friends over at the Reign of Troy, getting engaged. We're probably not doing that on this podcast, but you know, whatever.
Ryan.
Make things inappropriate.
Gosh, just wrap up
you're
the
going
podcast.
On vacation. I got to like give you one last dig or something. You know?
Okay, sure. Just wrap it up.
We
if
do.
Anyone's still listening at this point,
probably
man,
not.
You get a gold star.
Thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.